accession number 22342, reel 14.
Trooper Bowdler, reel 14. You were saying that because you'd been in action, you were feeling you were a bit nervous and jumpy when you came out of the army.
I was very jumpy, and I used to have bad nightmares and dreams. Mm.
How long did that go on for?
For a long time.
Yeah.
For a long time. And then you'd forget all about it, and then all of a sudden something would occur which would bring it all back, and you'd go on that cycle again. Now, of course, today, this annoys me intensely. What do they get? They get sort of post-traumatic stresses and things like that, and counselling and goodness knows what. And I have to say that I have seen more dreadful scenes than many of these people will ever see in their lifetime. Really horrible scenes. And there were no counselling for us. We just had to get on with it. And, you know, it's up to you to forget it. And eventually you do, of course. You put it to the back of your mind. But you'll never forget it. You cannot forget it. And all these incidents that I've told you about are as vivid in my mind today. I can see the box as clearly as anything. I can see the everything about it, and all the things that went on in there are just as clear now as the day they happened. They made that impression on me, on my mind. And they'll only disappear with my death, which can't be too long far away. I'm 80 on Tuesday, my 80th birthday on Tuesday. So I think you people are quite wise. It's given a few more years and it'll all be gone. You won't be able to get it on tape. It'll all be gone. But you've got your records, which is very good.
Thinking also about it, was there anything positive about having been in the army? Did it bring
positive?
Any beneficial effects?
Oh, yes. I rather think so. I was reaching an age which you might call as a troublesome teenager. I was not, I passed the teenage bit. I was 20 probably when I went into the services, because I spent my 21st birthday party, well, there was no party, I spent my 21st birthday on the boat going out. So I was fairly young. But I'd reached a stage where in civilian life I could have gone one way or the other. But because it was wartime, and I'd been involved with the Home Guard, that took up my time, and I got into a certain frame of mind about the whole thing, and serving the country and this, that and the other, you know. Not consciously, but it was the thing to do, the right thing to do. And when Coventry was bombed, I mean, I lived 12 miles from Coventry, and I was out on guard duty that night. And our village, Dunchurch, was bombed. One of the German planes unloaded its load short of the target, and my village got it. And several houses were burnt down, and there were craters all over the place. My coal merchant, he was killed. And I thought, well, you know, my friends, my pals in the village had all been called up or disappeared. And I was more or less on my own, socially. And I was in the Home Guard, and I thought, well, try and join the unit that you want to. And I heard that if you volunteered, you went to the regiment of your choice. So I rather fancied the Armoured Corps, and I volunteered. And I did. I went straight in, got into the Armoured Corps. Never regretted it. Suited me because, you know, I have a sort of mechanical bent of mind, technical bent of mind, and there were parts of it that I thoroughly enjoyed and found terribly exciting. I mean, you got to drive every conceivable vehicle, and they were very hard on you. The training was quite hard. I mean, I remember passing out on my soft vehicle courses, I was taken out into the sticks on Salisbury Plain, on roads, not on the soft going. And the instructor turned to me and said, right, he said, now, you haven't got any clutch, you've no brakes, get me home. And it was down to you, you had to do it. So you had to drive a 3-ton truck and not touch your brake pedal or your clutch pedal. Do it all on the gears. And timing the gear change so that it just snicked in.
With the accelerator.
With the accelerator. Mm. Judge your revs. Did it. And, you know, you did it. But
that's training you for disaster, though, isn't it? It's training you for things going seriously wrong. And
yes.
Having to cope.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But it's the coping bit that's the important bit, you see. And it, there's no doubt about it. It does come in useful at a later stage. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. Because you're enabled to think things through. You're confronted with a problem. And you can think of solutions and the way out of problems. Especially where, of course, most of my occupation was driving the things. The operating bit, wireless operating bit, I thoroughly enjoyed. I really enjoyed learning Morse code, and we used to sit out in the sunshine on benches back in camp with a 19 set, sending messages to one another by Morse and by RT, radio telephone. And I thoroughly enjoyed that. It was great fun. And I got quite proficient at Morse. Never used it. It was never used. It was all RT because it was close quarter stuff, you see. You talk tank to tank. You could hear what everybody else was saying.
You might have had to use it if you were on the regimental rear link.
Yes.
If you'd been back that.
Yes. 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 But of course we were denied that luxury.
Mm. Yes.
We didn't have it. Yes, well, as I say, the my 75mm gunner was my friend. And he came to Bovington with me, and we kept together. And he'd been married all through the war. He married before the war. And he invited me to his home in Mortlake, and I visited and saw his wife. And he questioned me about my marital status, and I said, well, no, I'm courting, and that's it. And he said, yeah, you want to get married. And my mind was in a whirl, actually. I didn't know what the heck I wanted to do. Mm. And I was totally unsettled. And I said, how can I get married? I've got nowhere to live. I don't want to live at home. And he said, well, you can come and stay with us. We'll have a great time. I said, oh, yeah. And anyway, he persuaded me. And so I married my wife, Betty. And we went to live with him. We took over the front room in this tiny house that they'd got. And we slept on the couch. The sofa turned into a double bed. And well, it went on great for a few months. And then my wife got pregnant. And obviously, we couldn't stay there. We had to get out. Mm. So we found a flat in Richmond and set up married life down there in a flat, a furnished flat. And I joined the company. I saw an advert in the, I think it was the Evening Post or some paper like that, which had been placed there by the British Oxygen Company. And they were looking for people. The advert said they wanted people to be an instructor in their welding school at Cricklewood. And I thought, well, I'll apply for that job. I'm sure I could do that.
Had you learned welding in the army?
Oh, it was all part of the
part of the Army
Corps? No, I learnt welding before I went in the Army.
Oh, that's right, you've been working in Coventry, hadn't you?
In Coventry. Yes, that's where I learnt my welding.
Mm.
But I got an AID certificate while I was there, and I was considered quite a good class of welder, you see. I could work on aircraft, AID, inspection department. And so I decided to apply, and I applied, got an interview, went up there in the winter of 1947, I remember, dreadful winter, through the snowdrifts, and I was given a test, practical and theoretical, and I passed that, seemingly with flying colours, and I was taken on as an instructor.
What have you been doing in the interim for work? Because you came out of the Army in the summer of 46.
Yes, I
you?
Took an emergency job in a fabricating business at the back of a garage in Sheen, East Sheen, run by a Greek who made all sorts of funny things using scrap materials and what have you, and he had an opportunity to get a contract for making chemical barrels out of stainless steel. But he didn't have anybody that could weld stainless steel, didn't know the first thing about it. And so he advertised for a job, for somebody that could do it. So I turned up and I said, well, I'm an AID certified welder. Yeah, I could do it, no problem. And so he took me on and I did it. I did the job. But he, quick as a I should never forget, quick as a flash, he put a scraping sign up outside his business saying, AID certified. And they weren't. It was me that was certified, not them. And so that was it. So I worked for them for a bit, and then I saw this advert for BOC. Well, BOC, you'd reach the top if you got in there. You know, it really was the bee's knees. Because apart from being an instructor, you were privy to all the latest developments in everything that was going on. And so I stuck there for a bit, and I instructed people from all over the world. They had a wonderful welding school there, and we used to get Indian princesses and people like that. They came in for courses because they were joining their father's company or something like that, and they were supposed to go through the mill, you know, and
learn the business from the bottom up.
That's right. Mm. Yes. So they come to us and get a thorough training in welding, and we used to get army personnel. They couldn't care less. You know, they looked on it as a huge holiday. So it was a waste of time instructing them. But we used to get all sorts. But I got the idea that I would do better outside on the sales technical side. So I went along to the boss and said, look, I don't think I'm cut out for this instructing, Mark. I said, can't I join the sales staff? Because they've got expenses. I didn't get expenses being working inside. There was a canteen there and everything. And my friends who were on the course with me said, you know, they were getting expenses and they had a free life and everything like that, work from home. And they said, yes, okay. And I found myself up in Birmingham, out on the road, as a sales technical service engineer. And that was my title. I was given a little red band with gold leaf lettering on it, British Oxygen Company, Technical Department, Technical Service Department. And I used to go troubleshooting. If a customer had a problem, I was sent out to solve it. And it was a very interesting life. And I had the open sesame to nearly everything you can think of, from lunatic asylums, prisons, atomic energy places, petrol refineries, a lot. I could, hospitals. I had the open sesame to all of those, purely on the basis of solving technical problems that they had.
While you were going into civil life and obviously building a career,
yes.
Did you keep in touch with your old comrades in the
yes,
regiment?
I did. Mm. Particularly this one, Bill Wallace.
Yes.
He was, and a few of the others, but gradually we all sort of drifted apart, except for Bill Wallace, and because he was only down in Mortlake, we could visit, and he could visit here. So that's what happened. We got together, and when I went up to Birmingham and Derby, I ended up in Derby for a time. My area for covering technical wise was a huge area. It covered Leicestershire, County Madras, Leicestershire, Derbyshire, Nottinghamshire, Lincolnshire, and Yorkshire. Now, Yorkshire in itself is a huge place.
Indeed.
But that was my territory. And anything of a technical nature, I handled on that. And I suppose I was quite successful, really, because the company eventually wanted to promote me, and they brought me down south again. So I came down here and went into our tail for a bit, and then they promoted to marketing manager down here. And that's what I ended up my working life doing. I had an office down in Waltham Abbey, bought this house, and I've lived here ever since. So I had quite a good career, really.
Do you think having been in the army was a benefit to that?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
In what way?
Well, I think all the experiences that you have in that environment are of use to you in life. You certainly get to know people, you know, who you can trust and who you can't trust, things like that. You do get to know. You can't leave the army and be naive.